Hello and welcome to the 36th. I almost lost count already. Yeah. Episode of the show Feast and Famine. I swear we don't just return for preview season, but we really kind of do.
We really do.
Thank God preview season almost never ends.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yay.
So, yes, obviously we're talking about Fate Reforged because, oh my God, so many of these cards look really good. Not only just like... these cards are awesome, but oh my God, the art is pretty.
Yeah, I was about to say.
Very, very pretty.
There's all these nice pretty blue elements, and like not just like the typical sort of...
in general, but...
yeah, but I mean
but like, our screen is currently Ugin the Spirit Dragon.
Yeah, which yeah. I was about to say, like, there's this sort of like typical, you know, like blue, like, you know, 00255 yeah. blue that you see in Magic a lot and stuff, but this is more like the tealy pretty, like icy blue. And it's
yeah,
because like, oh.
he's the Spirit Dragon. So let's just get right into this. We're going to be talking about Fate Reforged cards. I don't know exactly how many we'll get through before we give up and save some for next week, plus the inevitable cards that get spoiled between then and now.
We can make Sam record with us.
Oh, God, that's just mean.
She'll be here.
But we're definitely going to try to do at least the mythics that have been spoiled, because we've had, obviously, Ugin. We've had some of the past cons, and we've had some of the past dragons.
I'm really afraid my cracking is going to get on the mic. I'm sorry.
I don't think so. I can barely hear it from here.
It's because I'm moving away from you.
Yeah. So, just for the folks who have no idea what's going on. So, obviously, we are a Bizarro flavor podcast.
Who posts...
See?
Okay, yeah, I heard it that time for
Thank
sure.
Thank
you. Our apartment's haunted, and it's making noises.
Not really. Our plumbing is just weird.
You haven't loved the spirits enough lately. We haven't, you know, paid.
Yeah. So, we are a flavor podcast. We will look at the art and just the general flavor along with just... mm-hmm. We play casually. Like...
And we post podcasts super duper regularly.
Yeah.
All the time.
We'll see if we can force it to be more regular, since I keep threatening to make a Patreon, so we'll see.
Uh-huh.
Like, by threatening, I mean it is all there, and it is just a shell sitting there. Like, all I have to do is hit post. But we don't do enough stuff regularly for me to personally justify it.
Right, yeah. Absolutely.
So it's that endless battle of...
yeah.
Will, like, posting it make me do it? Probably, yeah, but I can't guarantee it, so I don't want to just yet.
Yeah, that's why I held off buying a new DS for so long until today. I was like, am I actually going to use this? But, oh man, did I want Omega Ruby. So that happened today.
Omega
Yay,
Ruby's so much fun.
Yeah.
I got it, too.
Nice.
Although, I think that means you have to get Treecko, by the way.
No.
Aw, because I got Mudkip. And Mary Kate got Torchic.
I don't think I've ever played with Treecko. I think I might have done it for, like, 5 seconds once, and I was like, this isn't happening, and I restarted.
Yeah. So, back to actual Magic. So, yes, we're going to go through, at the very least, the cons, the few dragons that have been spoiled, and some of the mythics, and there's a couple cycles that are really cool, too.
And I apologize for having already forgot all the names of all the things,
yeah.
And it's just, I'm
embarrassed. Yeah, we'll try to go over that, but just a quick refresher for those of you who may not know all that much about the story from... cons and from Fate Reforged. Mm-hmm.
You've come to us because you don't know the story.
It's entirely possible. Mm-hmm. Or you may just be new to MTGcast and this is the first thing that showed up on your feed. I'm sorry.
we're endearing, I promise.
Ish. So, Cons of Tarkir was the five clans on this sort of desolated plane. Like, there's still plenty of life, but dragons have been completely extinguished by these five clans that are now basically doing nothing but making war on each other. And
that's what I would do.
Yeah. Sarkhan Vol, who is a dragon-based planeswalker, for the past couple of years has had two different dragons shouting in his brain, particularly a piece of Nicol Bolas's mind sitting in there making him do the things that Nicol Bolas wants him to do. And then on Zendikar, he got another dragon, which is Ugin. He got, like, a piece of Ugin's soul, basically, shoved up in his brain, too. So now he's got super evil dragon and questionable dragon, who we don't really know too much about, except that at some point he sealed the Eldrazi away, so he can't be all bad. And he returned to his home plane of Tarkir, which he left because... So he was in shamanism with another clan and got these visions of dragons that were extinct on his plane, and that caused his spark to ignite, so he started looking at other planes for other dragons. and when he
found
met
them, yeah, much what, more than he intended to.
No, he intended to meet more too. I mean, but, at this I mean, point, like, all of his cards.
He got closer to them than he intended.
Yes, so he met up with the piece of Ugin and returned to.
I was watching a thing earlier today, and now I'm just thinking about Falkor, and I was like, what would happen if Sarkon Vol met Falkor?
Yeah. So he got this piece of Ugin's soul and returned to his home plane and basically found, like, Ugin's corpse and did something, which resulted in, now we're in Fate Reforged, and the best example I've basically heard of this mm-hmm. is someone comparing it, actually it was the Mana Pool, comparing it to Back to the Future, where there's Khons of Tarkir, which is, like, I don't remember the year Back to the Future is in. Oh, God, what is...
19... Well, which...
The first one.
No, I mean, like, when he starts and
when
stuff.
When he starts. 1980-something?
Okay. Yeah, I was about to say.
It's
That's what the internet's for.
1980-something when his dad is, like, sad and Biff continues to, like, ruin his dad's life, basically.
The actor who plays Biff is a pretty great comic, by the way.
Just then Sarkon does the thing that sends him back in time, and this is... That is Fate Reforged in this case. It is that crucial moment that decided the fates of Biff and his father for the rest of their lives.
Mm.
And depending on how that goes from here, either we're going to have old Khons, or if basically the timeline where Sarkon succeeds and mm-hmm. the thing that we'll talk about happens, or doesn't happen technically, then we get Dragons of Tarkir, which is what we already know to be the next set.
Right.
The dragons win this war that they're in the middle of. And basically that thing is that Nicol Bolas...
1985,
okay. Nicol Bolas, big evil dragon who is responsible for pretty much all the evil in the multiverse because they keep finding excuses to make him even more evil.
Mm-hmm.
1,100 and I don't remember exactly how many years ago. The problem is I want to say 82, and I want to say 82 because... I think Brian on the Mana Pool, because I listened to this friggin' yesterday, was, got it wrong. He was like, no, it's 1,100 and...
A different number.
Not 82. But, eh.
82's the one that stuck.
Yeah, 82's the one that stuck. And
1,100 some odd years ago.
Yeah, Nicol Bolas killed Ugin, and that resulted in the rest of the dragons also losing their battle. Obviously this took... much longer, but
mm-hmm.
without Ugin, the dragons just started to die off and get killed by the humans and the other humanoid sentient beings of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got Khons of Tarkir. So this is set around that time.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a couple interesting things, like some of the clans maintain their same abilities, but two of them have like an older version of the ability that's supposed to be like how it adapted into the new thing.
Okay.
So
once, because it makes sense that things would be different when there were dragons versus now that there aren't.
Yeah. So, and more of like, this was thousands of years ago, this was 8,000 years ago,
mm-hmm.
they have since developed this ability into something slightly different.
Yep.
That works slightly differently.
Because the human race will evolve.
Yeah. So with the, let's see, let me go through this in the order I can remember. Mardu had Raid, which was a keyword ability, which means that it doesn't always do the same thing, but there's some connecting theme through it. In this case, if you attack this turn, you get X. It's usually an additional ability or something to that effect. However, they don't have Raid in Fate Reforged. Instead, they have a really interesting ability called Dash.
Hmm.
So things will have a Dash cost, and if you pay it for the Dash cost... These are all on creatures so far. I don't think it would really work with non-creatures, though.
Mm-hmm.
You play it. It gets haste, so you can attack with it this turn, but then at the end of turn, it goes back to your hand.
Okay.
So for some of them, it's less expensive because you don't get to keep it. For some of them, it's more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Just because they have, like, an Enter the Battlefield ability or something.
Right.
Then the Obzon had... Oh, what is it called? Sorcery speed. They could pay an amount of mana that... was different for different creatures, tap themselves, and get a +1/+1 counter.
Mm-hmm.
So instead, their new mechanic for Fate Reforged is called Bolster. And Bolster will have a number next to it. So I think the biggest I've seen off the top of my head is Bolster 5.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is, when this creature enters the battlefield, you put 5 +1/+1 counters on the creature you control with the least toughness or tied for the least toughness.
Right.
So if that's your only creature, it gets 5 plus 1 plus 1 counters. If you have, like, a 0-1 over there, it gets 5 plus 1 counters and turns into a 5-6. So it's pretty good. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, they're not all 5, but yeah.
Right.
Then the... What are they called? The, snake people. What are they called?
Crumbs.
No, not crumbs. Well, PG-rated swear. So the Jeskai, which were the monk group, still have their same prowess, which is the whenever you play, cast a non-creature spell, they get a plus one for the end of, until the end of turn, and they may get an extra thing that goes along with it. I can't remember either of them. This is really annoying because my favorite two clans are the ones that got new abilities. Mm-hmm. The Teemer also have a keyword ability, so they are the, like, elemental shaman folks up in the mountains. They had Ferocious, which was a keyword, so whenever you have a creature with power 4 or greater, do a thing. So they are keeping Ferocious. And Sultai, that's it.
There you go.
The Sultai still have Delve, which is the ability that lets them exile cards from their graveyard to pay for something. So let's actually get into, like, some of these cards.
Yay.
I say she's looking at her phone.
I was trying to look up the things.
So obviously we are starting with...
Ugin the Spirit Dragon, who's all pretty, like, frosty blue and swirly.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of not unlike Articuno, a little bit. A
little bit. So I do... Before we actually get into any of his, like, stats or anything, I think we should just talk about the art. And for one thing,
please.
I really like the wings.
Mm-hmm. I was about to say.
You don't even notice it the first time I looked at him that he has these beautiful, like, feathery wings.
Mm-hmm.
I just realized who their artist is, and I'm very confused, because that's not his general style.
Huh.
So, Raymond Swanland, if I'm remembering correctly, which there's a 50-50 chance I'm not, so hang on just one second.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I go to Gatherer. You keep talking about that, and I'm going to pull up Gatherer.
Thank you. Sorry, what am I just talking
just
about?
The art on him.
It's cool because he's both very defined and also blends into the clouds, which are clearly in the distance behind him. There's this real ethereal, you know, godlike, almost angelicness about him and stuff. But at the same time, he's this, you know, really intense, imposing dragon figure. And what's the name of the Yu-Gi-Oh card that Seto Kaiba was obsessed with?
Blue Eyes White Dragon.
Okay, that's what that was. It's sort of not unlike that a little bit.
So I checked. It is Raymond Swanland, who I think, which, just look up his art specifically on Gatherer. You will know exactly who I'm talking about, because he's the guy who has, like, the big sort of particulates that you always see in a lot of his stuff, where there are these really sharp angles, and usually there's some kind of explosion, or he finds an excuse to have something like exploding, like he did. I just looked it up. It's a red and a black aura from Return to Ravnica, and it's something auger. Basically, it's like this, almost like a demon skeleton dude who's got these big, like, almost stone-like tendrils sort of shooting out of all of his different body parts, and it gives +4/-4. So, like, if you survive it, you hit really hard, but you probably won't survive.
Nice.
But you see these, like, really sharp geometric angles, these a lot of, like, dirt flying up, or a lot of little particulates and explosions, and like, a lot of detail, such that anyone who's ever seen someone do, like, a 3D card, a lot of people who do 3D cards will not do Raymond Swanland art, because it's really freaking difficult.
Right.
And, like, I can see the inspiration for, like, how this is Raymond Swanland art, but it just does not fit with a lot of the other stuff he's done.
Right.
But he's so pretty.
Yes. Yes.
And I don't know why, but I really like the detail of his tail sort of curls back around one of his wings and then goes under the card frame and then appears really far back in the distance again, just to give this sort of sense of scale of how big he really is.
Right, yeah. And it's cool how, like, sort of soft and feathery the wings are and stuff, but everything else about him is very hard and looks armored.
Yeah.
And stuff, like he's wearing these, like, gauntlets that are...
It's not even... I don't think he's even wearing them. It looks
like...
It's almost as if his... probably because he's a planeswalker, he's sort of built up this... almost like a gauntlet look and almost sort of shoulder pads out of his own scales.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way that you really sort of get the feeling of this is not a wild bestial thing. This is a thing that mm-hmm. is thinking
and yeah.
sizing.
And it's cool to see that, like it's a sort of semi-anthropomorphic, like, shape to, like, the rest of his body
yeah,
and stuff.
Bit.
But then his head is purely dragon, but at the same time, it still has that mind in there. It's not
yeah.
a lizard. It's clearly, you know, very wise.
And the
dragon.
Beautiful horns, which, again, refer
yes.
to something else that we're going to look at in, like, immediately after this.
Look like opal.
Yeah. So let's talk about his actual stats real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So he is Ugin, the spirit dragon. For 8 colorless mana, he is a planeswalker Ugin, mythic rare. And he comes down with 7 loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to swap off for his different
sure.
abilities?
So his +2 ability, Ugin, the spirit dragon, deals 3 damage to target creature or player, which seems pretty handy-dandy, I'd say.
I'm just going to say, like, his +2 is blow up that thing.
Yeah.
His +2 is a free lightning bolt every turn.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
So
and
then,
you only need to do it twice before you
yeah,
can use his...
Yeah, before you can use his ultimate, and it still doesn't quite kill him.
Yep. Yeah, he still has one, so you can build him
yep.
up again.
Yep. Assuming no one's hitting him.
Correct.
Like, this is one of those cases where you might actually get to cast his ultimate. So his second ability, which obviously in most cases these are the only two that you should ever care about, his minus X. Exile each permanent with converted mana cost X or less that's 1 or more colors. That is very oddly worded, because they've
yes.
actually just done it before, where it's do thing to all colored permanents, but
mm-hmm.
besides that, it's really good. You do have to be kind of careful that you don't blow up your own stuff.
Right.
But I guess if you're using Ugin, they're probably going to do some sort of, like, a push for more colorless stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe in dragons, but we'll see.
Yep.
But I do like that it's not, like, everything that costs X.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything that costs X or less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very inclusive.
Oh, yeah.
And then his ultimate for -10, so if you beef him up twice and no one's hit him and stuff, then he'll come down to 1 after this. You gain 7 life, draw 7 cards, then put up to 7 permanent cards from your hand onto the battlefield.
I do really love that they do the part about draw the cards first, so
mm-hmm.
you have a chance to get the...
Mm-hmm.
7 permanents that you want to play.
Yep.
Oh, so good. So the big thing here is that, remember, there was a fight between Ugin and Nicobolas, so we just wanted to quickly look at what Nicobolas, Planeswalker, the card does.
Mm-hmm. Who has a converted mana cost of 8.
Yes, who has a converted mana cost of 8. So he's 4 colorless, a blue, 2 black, and a red. So he's sort of a Grixis, but with an extra red thrown in.
Mm-hmm.
Black thrown in, sorry, I can't English.
I know the feel.
Yeah. So again, we've got this sort of, like, almost humanoid, anthropomorphized body.
Mm-hmm.
But with... you can't see it really well in this art, sadly, but he's mm-hmm. got a much more draconic, slightly scarier head.
Mm-hmm.
But you can still see...
And his wings are more that sort of, you know...
Yeah, his wings are almost
more
like
leathery.
Bat-like.
Yeah, I was about
yeah,
to say.
Very, very bat-like. But when you look at the horns, you see a lot of similarities.
Mm-hmm.
Like... I'd almost say that Ugin's appear to be a little bit more... Almost...
Ornate?
I want to say elk? But I guess ornate, they're a lot rougher. There's sharper angles to them, as opposed
mm-hmm.
to Nicobolas's, which are these almost like perfect ox horns that are sort
mm-hmm.
of really smooth and meet at this
yeah,
almost
it's sort
like,
of a foil to, you know, how everything is clearly like dark and rough about Nicobolas. He just
yeah.
has these simple, smooth, stabby horns.
And the like crystal that he maintains floating in between them.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to Ugin, where his horns just almost feel like they're more natural.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, it almost seemed like something like forged in like the sea, almost like.
Yeah.
I don't know quite how to word what I'm looking for, but
it just feels more natural.
Mm-hmm.
But as for his abilities, so he starts out with 5.
Mm-hmm. And do you want to do the first one? I'll do the
yeah,
second. You can do the ultimate this time.
So he's got +3. Destroy target non-creature permanent. Not really a defend thing, but it's definitely very annoying,
because mm-hmm.
if you've ever played against someone using this, they'll probably have to blow up your land.
Yeah. And then, I can English as well. -2, gain control of target creature.
And that's a little bit more in flavor with what he was doing in his set, because
mm-hmm.
this was back in Alara, where he basically was pitching the last time we had a tricolor themed set, which was in that case the Shards, which is one color and both of its allies together. And he was sort of, all of the Shards were forcibly separated into their own like mini planes,
right?
And an event was taking place that could conceivably force them all back together, and he was trying to use that event to elevate himself back to the level of the old, the planeswalkers of old, who were essentially like energy beings who were just gods,
right?
Which he was one of, but the mending happened, he's just a planeswalker, and he tried to get that power back, so he was like controlling different people and all the different Shards to try and make it so that he would get as much power as possible. Didn't quite work for him, thankfully, so we're not all dead.
Hooray!
Yeah. And then -9 instead of -10. Nico Bolas, Planeswalker.
It still wouldn't wipe him out if you did him twice and he didn't lose any loyalty counters.
Yep.
Sorry.
Nico Bolas, Planeswalker, deals 7 damage to target player. That player discards 7 cards, then sacrifices 7 permanents. It is almost a perfect opposite. In fact,
I like
that all of his things are, I do this thing, as opposed to Nico Bolas's, which are all, you do bad things now.
Right.
Yep. So, let's see here. First, I'd like to hunt up the... this is going to be really doofy, isn't it?
Pretty blues.
I'm trying to find the cons of the past right now. Hang on. 1 second, this is going to be really weird. I think this is what's causing all the trouble.
So, Right now, you're hovering over all these Jeskai things.
Yeah, well, like, I'm trying to...
I'm just, like, trying to come up with background noise.
Oh.
Oh, and there was the pretty one. The...
Okay, so I guess they did... I'm confused.
Okay.
And the leaders actually are rares this time. So, they did a really cool thing this time that I really like, where the cons of the past and the dragon leaders of the past are rares instead of mythics. So first, the leader of the Abzan. Do you want to try to pronounce that?
A white person interpretation is to say Daghatar, the adamant.
That's what I was going to go with, too.
But I'm sure there's a very strong possibility that is not how it's pronounced at all.
I think you're good with that.
But
so.
Daghatar the Adamant, converted mana cost of 4, 3 colorless, 1 white, legendary creature human warrior, as we mentioned, is a rare. So 0/0, vigilance. Daghatar the Adamant enters the battlefield with 4+1/+1 counters on it. So it's technically a 4/4.
Yeah.
And then for 1 colorless, 1 and 1 black or green, and a second black or green, move a +1/+1 counter from target creature onto a second target creature.
Yeah, I did totally forget to mention that they brought back hybrid mana, though the only places it's seen so far is on the cons of old.
Right. And then, from a target creature onto a second target creature. So, that's cool. He can, help out his couple of buddies.
Okay.
Our victories will protect 1,000 generations.
So I really like two things that you can see in his art. So one... one of the massive buildings that we see in air quotes modern Abzan society.
You see the scaffolding.
It's being built up.
It's under construction.
That's so good. But
yeah.
I also like that as opposed to Anafenza of the Foremost, which is the leader from Khan's time, he seems to actually be like a magic user because you can see how he's holding the mace, which frankly looks quite terrifying, and he's holding it at an odd place, almost as if it's more of a scepter instead of a mace. But his other hand is sort of enthralled in sand in a way that is clearly not natural.
Yeah, it's like, as if a very deliberate, controlled swirling.
Yeah, as if it's rotating around his hand. Sort of this implication that...
it looks like he's bringing... it could be the mace itself.
I think it's actually a scepter now, and that it is in some way controlling it. And it's again, that idea that the victories of these people sort of echo down the ages, but also this idea that the Abzan tend to have where it's this focus on the future generations, and how even when the Abzan die, they have a thing where they join with a kin tree and they still draw upon the spirits of their dead to do things. Not always useful things, but things.
Looking at his mask, it's There's a face, and that's creepy. I have to sneeze. It's not going to happen.
I think it's... I really like it. I think it's a little bit weird that it's not his face.
Uh-huh.
But I do like that it sort of has the thing about being able to split apart and then come back together. Yeah. Wait and see if you're actually going to sneeze.
I don't think so. But I'm close. I'm like 80% there.
Okay.
It's a sneeze tease.
So while she's doing that, one of the other cycles that I'm going to talk about...
And then also just the opal dragon scales on his garb.
Really nice. Is really cool. But... So one of the other things... Now I have to mention this, too. And I like how when you have the... You've got the sort of what we now think of as the Abzan armor, where it's the sort of scaled, sort of a male thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that, but he also literally has dragon scales on his armor.
Yep.
It's... Oh my god. So the one of the other cycles that I think will bounce between these two on our way down is the sieges. Mm-hmm. So these are literally... cards representing a battle between the dragons and the humanoids of Tarkir.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one...
Looks like Groudon.
The first one is Citadel Siege. For 2 colorless and 2 white, it is a rare enchantment. As Citadel Siege enters the battlefield, choose Khans or Dragons. If you choose Khans, at the beginning of your turn... at the beginning of combat on your turn... Put 2 +1/+1 counters on target creature you control. If you choose dragons, at the beginning of combat on each opponent's turn, tap target creature that player controls. So I like it's the idea that, like, if the Khans are doing well in this, like, siege, it's they just keep getting stronger and stronger, because in this case it's the Abzan that's their thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't kill them immediately, they just keep getting bigger.
Yep.
And I like that the dragons is like, if they're doing better, it's basically they're flying over and basically strafing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no, you can do nothing today. Yeah. Nothing. Cower in fear.
Mm-hmm. Yay.
And I kind of like the art just because it almost seems to say that.
Uh-huh.
Specifically the dragon side, because you've got, oh god, I know what that dragon's name is, but I cannot remember to save my life.
Now, it's cool how there's very different designs in the dragons.
Yeah.
There's the one that looks like Groudon. There's one that's a bit more live.
Yeah, we'll see that really when we're looking at the individual dragons.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the named ones.
That one.
Yeah.
And that little feller up there.
It's almost like a turtle down in the bottom left mm-hmm. corner of the art.
Yeah.
But, so yes. Let's...
Creepy, Mina snapping turtle.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next of the... Oh, sorry, really quickly. There's actually one mechanic I completely forgot about.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So, that would be Manifest.
Okay.
So... Morph is not a thing in this set. Instead, we have Manifest. Basically, Manifest is actually Ugin's magic, mm-hmm. his weird spirit magic that is hard to describe. Whereas
MacGuffins.
Whereas Morph is basically what the humans sort of figured out how Ugin did it
mm-hmm.
and replicated it, but used and it more as like a disguise magic.
Their interpretation.
Yeah.
Okay.
So with Manifest, the best way to describe it is just with... Soul Summons. So for 1 colorless and 1 white, it is a common sorcery. Manifest the top card of your library, which has the reminder text, put it onto the battlefield face down as a 2/2 creature. Turn it face up at any time for its mana cost if it's a creature. If it's not a creature, you can literally never turn it face up.
Mm.
And then the flavor text, Ugin's magic reached beyond the dragons. The clans have adapted it for war.
Nice.
Yeah. So, that is not the... Where is the next... Oh, so here's... Ward Scale Dragon is the one that we could see in Siege of the...
Citadel Siege?
Citadel Siege? Was that it? Am mm-hmm. I really that goofy?
Apparently.
Yep, Citadel Siege. So, yeah, we could see a Ward Scale Dragon in there.
Who looks like a mean Triceratops snapping turtle.
Yep, and we'll go over this again as well, but I will point out that... The dragons actually have their own clan symbols.
Oh, that's so cool.
Which are very similar to the clan that they sort of belong to, but not quite the same.
Like, right, there's
slight changes.
Mm-hmm.
That's
Bamp. Mind Scour Dragon.
That is one of the Jeskai dragons.
He's almost swan-like.
Yeah. Where is it? So, do you want to do the Monastery Siege?
Yeah, Monastery Siege is so pretty. Again, swan-like, and just, I don't know how to deal with it, because it's so obviously a dragon, but it's not the typically conceived dragon.
It's one of the things we see where, so, before we get really into it, the dragons, instead of being 3-colored, are 2-colored. Specifically, they are the 2 allied colors in a wedge.
Right.
So the blue ones would be blue and white. Mm-hmm. And they're this like beautiful sort of bird-like thing, mm-hmm. where you have almost snake-like body of a like traditional Eastern dragon,
mm-hmm.
that is covered in feathers and has sort of a more Western like leg design and these large almost angelic wings.
Mm-hmm. They're almost kind of sphinxy.
Very sphinxy, yeah. It's just, there's something different about the head,
mm-hmm.
just because it's obviously it's less human, but it's just oddly angular in ways that,
and smoother in some ways. Monastery Siege is a 2 colorless, 1 blue. It's an uncommon enchantment. As monastery, or is it rare?
No, it's rare.
Okay, yeah. From my angle, the color was wrong. As Monastery Siege enters the battlefield, choose cons or dragons. Cons: at the beginning of your draw step, draw an additional card, then discard a card, or dragons. Spells your opponents cast that target you or a permanent you control cost 2 more to cost to cast. The cost 2 more to cast. So
it's again, a lot of the dragon abilities seem to be this idea of just hampering the opponent,
mm-hmm.
whereas the cons are benefiting themselves in some way that relates to the clan. In this case, it's the Jeskai, so their big thing is like increasing their own knowledge. Well, technically, it's their path to enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, they have survived one of these battles with the dragons, which frankly is, if that's not a step to enlightenment, I don't know what is. So their former leader back in the past was Shu Yun, the Silent Tempest. For 2 colorless and a blue, he is a legendary creature human monk. He is a rare. He is a 3/2 with prowess. And whenever you cast a non-creature spell, you may pay 2 red-white hybrids. If you do, target creature gains double strike until end of turn. That seems really good.
Uh-huh.
Like, expensive, but really good.
Yeah.
Like, he's the kind of commander that would be... Like, he's the kind of legendary creature I think would make a good commander.
Right.
But
just in terms of art, like, it's always weird to me when, like, the humanoids are, like, super hyper-realistic stuff. But I love the background,
I love the background. I actually really like his design.
Yes, I agree. It's always weird to me because in my mind it's such like this fantasy game that I imagine it to be very obviously drawn out and stuff, but then every now and again you get these realistic people and it's a little bit of a shock to the system, I guess.
Well, see, what I really like is, and I don't remember if this actually continues with some of the other ones, but these past ones seem to have a much more like important focus on magic as opposed to their weapons or being mm-hmm. like a hand-to-hand fighter.
Right.
So, I mean, with him...
I've definitely noticed that so far.
With I think it was Narset was the first leader we met who had the crazy sort of, like, bow staff glaive thing. And when we look at him, he doesn't even have a weapon. He's holding a scroll. He's got these massive, very... I want to say it's Buddhist, but I can never remember. The big beads around his neck. Like
I want to say it's Buddhist, but I couldn't
When I say big, I mean they are literally, like, fist-sized things.
Yep.
But you can also see the...
They're in a library, basically.
Well, he's in a library, but there's also, like, the inner eye shining on his forehead, and almost like this glowing dragon that is clearly reaching beyond his shoulder.
Mm.
That something about the way it's placed makes it look as if this is not a natural thing. It's also not something he's immediately in control of, as if it's just sort of this... I don't know why, but because of the positioning and because of, like, the glow and the fact that it's leaving his body,
mm-hmm.
as if it's not something he's completely in control of, almost like a, like, living tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some representation of whatever his
like
magic
something
is.
Something he's unlocked but not fully tapped into.
Not even that, just something where he's gone, like, this is a power that I am not meant to control. Like, it is a power that will help me when it sees fit.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like a very, very monkish idea.
Uh-huh. It reminds me of, I was watching the Oxcast play, I believe, Sorcery and Sorcery 2, and in that game there's the idea that you have, like, a spirit who you pray to, and that spirit changes depending on your gameplay.
Yeah.
And stuff, and, you know, depending on, like, if you continue down a certain path, then your relationship with that spirit grows stronger and stuff, but if, like, you keep changing, then it stays a bit weaker, and it's not as likely to help you out.
Well, I'm watching the, Grim and Paul Let's Play live stream from Loading Ready Run. They're playing the absolutely horrible game Bound by Flame, But there's an interesting mechanic in it where mm-hmm. your character is sort of possessed by a demon, which frankly most of the time is more rational than the main character.
Nice!
So as you're playing the game, you can make these choices that are basically handing more and more control of your body over to the demon, and or taking it away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you become more powerful, but you become weaker to the specific enemy you're fighting, but you also do more damage to them. It's a weird thing, but it's this idea that like giving over part of your power to... Or giving over part of your body to something else that may help you.
Mm-hmm.
So, up next, we have... Where are they? Where is the siege or the leader?
Palace siege.
There we go.
You
did the last siege, so...
Yep, your turn.
Palace siege for 3 colors and 2 black. It is a rare enchantment. Sorry, I choked and died there for a second.
Pat.
As Palace Siege enters the battlefield, choose cons or dragons.
I'm noticing a theme here.
I should hope so. If you choose cons, at the beginning of your upkeep, return target creature card from your graveyard to your hand. That's a very Sultai thing to do.
Uh-huh.
Like, there is no rest. Get back here. Dragons.
Hey, get up, you lazy bum.
At the beginning of your upkeep, each opponent loses 2 life, and you gain 2 life.
Nice.
So it's that sort of idea that I guess these would be black and blue dragons, I think,
mm-hmm.
are very, like, aggressive, and they're, like, they're... That's usually sort of a poisonous, almost snake-like ability, which works here, because, I mean, like, mm-hmm. the one dragon who we can see most clearly is just, like, dripping something from his mouth,
mm-hmm.
and has this very serpentine head.
Yeah. It's a very, like, thick. It's not, like, a lithe serpentine.
It's almost a,
like, it's like necklace, somehow.
Yeah, I'd almost call it like an anaconda sort of thing. Like, there's no clear divide between the head and the neck.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very thick. It's that sort of thing where it's... You could probably... Like, people looking at it are probably like, it could swallow me, and it wouldn't even have to chew. Which is good, because its teeth look freaking horrifying.
Yes. Yeah, you would hope it wouldn't chew.
Really hope.
But I'll say, just in the card art, I love how... So of the sieges we've looked at thus far, I feel like this is the one that most looks frenzied and stuff, with the action of the dragon and the dragons in the background.
Yeah,
except the others were a bit closer.
Yeah,
and stuff. It was just this particular
is definitely
scene,
like a farther back landscape. Look, which works because the Sultai have these like large sprawling cities, mm-hmm. and that's definitely what's going on here. Is they're being screwed over by that a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and the dragons are coming down and attacking these walkways that go between their different larger buildings.
It's not unreminiscent of Two Towers, the attack on Osgiliath.
Yeah. So...
Flare. That is horrifying. Yeah. That's going to haunt my nightmares.
Well, don't worry, you get the leader instead.
Okay. instead of Soulflare, we're going to look at Tazigar the Golden Fang, who is 5 colorless and 1 black, legendary creature, human shaman, obviously a rare, is a 4/5, and he has Delve. So each card you exile from your graveyard while casting the spell plays for 1 colorless mana. And then for 2 colorless mana and 2 green-blue hybrids, put the top 2 cards of your library into your graveyard, then return a non-land card of an opponent's choice from your graveyard to your hand.
That's a little bit weird, but I guess it's the sort of idea.
Your library into your graveyard, return a non-land card. Okay.
I guess it's the idea that... you can delve, and you can sort of control what's in your graveyard,
mm-hmm.
and just leave behind very specific things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not sure I really like this.
Mm-hmm.
The card art, I think, is really cool, though.
Yeah, I love...
Yeah, I mean,
this.
Again, we have another thing where there is a zombie who is carrying a fruit basket, which is just a thing that Sultai do, apparently. Like, you have this immensely dark and creepy and foreboding thing, I don't know why, but an immensely pale guy who's just sitting there with
the
no
most
shirt.
Colorful thing is the fruit on the basket of this guy's helmet.
Yeah, I don't know why, but just the creepy, pale-skinned dude with almost no, like, pigment who is just... sitting on a throne, no shirt, no pants, just like a skirt and a whip and a crown. That is immensely disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that there is a pretty much all black zombie with a fruit basket on his head makes it that much better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a guy who just clearly does not care and might be insane.
He gives no F's.
He's probably just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see here.
Yeti.
So do you want Outpost Siege and I'll take the next leader?
Okay. So Outpost Siege, three colorless, one red, a rare enchantment. As Outpost Siege enters the battlefield, choose Concert Dragons, in case you hadn't caught on yet. Cons, at the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library. Until end of turn, you may play that card. Dragons, whenever a creature you control leaves the battlefield, Outpost Siege deals one damage to target creature or player.
Yep, so that's really good. I especially, like, the Dragons one, honestly, ironically enough, works really well with the Mardu ability of Dash.
Because
it doesn't say dies, it says leaves the battlefield.
Yep.
Having them bounce back to your hand totally counts.
Nice. Ooh, Shockshot Dragon is kind of,
I guess we don't actually have the con yet for Red.
Curious.
I'm willing to bet he's going to be an orc, but we'll see. Oh, for God's sake.
That looks like the thing from Princess Mononoke.
So I guess I'll do Frontier Siege.
Okay.
So for three colorless and one green, it's an enchantment. As Frontier Siege enters the battlefield, choose Cons or Dragons.
Say what?
If you choose Cons, at the beginning of each of your main phases, you have at least two. There are ways to get more. They're weird, but still. Add two green to your mana pool.
Nice.
That is amazing. If you pick Dragons, whenever a creature with flying enters the battlefield under your control, you may have it fight target creature you don't control. That's also really good. I mean, while green doesn't really get a lot of flyers, except for the dragons that we've already seen that they're getting, overall, that's not a... Like, that is just a good removal ability. The benefit, as well, is that it's May, so it's not like, I played a dragon! You only have one creature, I have to fight it, and now I lose my dragon.
No.
You can just go, I play a dragon, and skip that trigger, because I can.
Hooray!
Yay! So I know we have the leader of this one.
No, I lied. I'm sorry.
There he is. The other dragon claw.
Okay, Yasova Dragon Claw, two colorless, one green, legendary creature, human warrior. It's obviously a rare, and a 4/2, who has trample. At the beginning of combat on your turn, you may pay one colorless and two blue-red hybrids. If you do, gain control of target creature.
What a splendid mess. He's right at this. Oh, the scientist and his genesis.
At the beginning of your
Just acknowledge the break. There was probably some music.
At the beginning of combat on your turn, you may play one colorless, two blue-red hybrid mana. If you do, gain control of a target creature and opponent controls with power less than Yasova Dragonclaw's power until end of turn. Untap that creature, and it gains haste until end of turn.
That's pretty sweet, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
I like the kitty.
It's an act of treason. Yeah, that is a massive saber-toothed cat who she's just like, good kitty. Also, I really would like to know what her weapon is.
Mm-hmm.
Like claws.
I was going to say, it looks like the dragon
claw. Yeah, and I do like that you can't quite see it, but there's actually a second claw on the other end.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so pretty. And I assume that's where the whole title of Dragon Claw may have came from.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Yeah. It's really cool, and she's got a really nice ability, but it's not a, like, game-breaking ability. I also like that she activates Ferocious, even though she only costs 3.
Yay.
That's really good for the teamer. So let's see here. Oh, there's the mouse. Okay.
Ooh.
So, yeah, I believe most of the dragons have been spoiled. At the very least, we've got 3 here, and I'm pretty sure there's at least one more, but we'll see. So, up first is the sort of Obzon dragon, Dromaka the Eternal. So for 3 colorless, a green and a white, it is a legendary creature, dragon. It is also rare, not mythic. 5/5, flying, whenever a dragon you control attacks, bolster 2, which if you don't remember, choose a creature with the least toughness among creatures you control, and put 2 +1/+1 counters on it. The Bane of Countless Shattered Weapons, each a failure to slay her. By,
Dagatar the Adamant.
Yep. And we should mention that every single one of these dragons that we've seen so far, I believe in, either their flavor text or in some other reference, has been stated as being female.
Cool.
Yep. So where's the next one?
Uh-huh. Kolaghan, the Storm's Fury, who's three colorless, one black, one red. Also a rare legendary creature dragon. This one's a 4/5 with flying, obviously. Whenever a dragon you control attacks, creatures you control get +1/+0 until end of turn, and has dash for three for basically its casting cost.
Yeah.
And yeah, so you can cast this spell for its dash cost. If you do, it gains haste and it's returned from the battlefield to its owner's hand at the beginning of the next end step. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I like that it's something that you could definitely use as a like instant win sort of thing, because you basically go, okay, they're not expecting this. Dashing, 4 damage in the sky. Also, everyone gets +1 now, so I also get +1. So that's 5 damage in the sky that you weren't expecting to get hit with today.
Yep.
Along with the +1 that you're giving to every other creature you control.
Yep, yep.
But yes, I believe this one is also referred to as a female somewhere else. The red-black dragons have a really cool design, where they seem to have, I think it's
like an anemone head.
They've got, well, yeah, they've got like the multiple like head ridges and sort of the fins connecting the different pointy bits. But then they also have
double wings.
Yeah, they have double wings and they have 4 legs. I don't know why, but something, and the weird like three fingered feet, I guess, toed feet.
Yeah, there's something.
They're very, not quite eagle, almost like raptor, except that instead of the focus being on the large inner claws, it's a much thicker central claw.
Yep.
Yeah, it's just really cool. Like, these are very, like, primordial, very dinosaur-like, except for the very feathery wings, which I think is a really interesting contrast to the horribleness of the rest of it. And I also should say, I really like the altered, like, dragon Mardu symbol. Because as opposed to just, like, the wings, it's almost a double wing. Because you can see, like, the original Mardu wings, but then there's this other sort of, almost like a much thinner pair that goes up and comes back down.
I just can't help but think of Dimitri Martin's routine where he's talking about, if you want to make a legendary creature, and stuff, just put a set of wings on it. Lizard becomes a dragon. This becomes that. And a hawk becomes a double hawk.
Double hawk. I just want to make sure that there aren't any hiding down here.
Okay.
Okay, and there's one more dragon. At the very least, I'm still pretty sure there's another one, but... So, Silumgar, the Drifting Death. For 4 colorless, a blue and a black.
Looks like a friendlier turtle.
It's not... I still think it's kind of snake-like. You even have the, like, fangs up the front. So,
the
Drifting Death, for colorless, a 2 and a black. It is a legendary creature dragon. It's a rare... It's a 3/7, so big butt, not very scary at the front. Flying, hexproof, and whenever a dragon you control attacks, creatures defending player controls get -1/-1 until the end of turn. No machinations, no puppet strings, no plots, just pure sweeping death. Tezzagar the Golden Fang. That one's real. It's a very
cool.
Good
when
card.
When you look at the card art, it is just pure sweeping death.
Oh, yeah. And I love the way that there's just sort of like a... Not even like a smoke, just sort of this fume leaking out from the side of its mouth.
Mm-hmm.
As if there's just so much horrible toxin in there that it just can't quite contain all of it.
And it also has like this sort of grin, like it's smug about it.
Yeah, it's very smug about it. I'm just quickly trying to open up this album to see if the other dragon that I thought had been spoiled is here. So we'll see. Da, 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 da. Let's see. So one thing that should be said is that the pseudo refuge, the like Thornwood Falls, Tranquil Cove, Windsguard Crag, all those things are making a reappearance. Though specifically, they are going to be sometimes in place of your basic land slot. You'll get one, and sometimes you might get a shock land. So they're not specifically, like, you're not guaranteed to get any of them, so don't count on it, but that'll be a nice surprise if you do get any of them. I'm still not seeing any new dragons that we haven't seen yet, but there's probably a few more left. These are from yesterday. There are a couple cards I really want to talk about, but we'll save those for next episode. Like, especially, there are some mythic rares that are just like, oh my goodness, that is beautiful. So there's one dragon, but he's in a different language, so that'll be difficult. Okay, I knew there were two. So we have all the dragons done. So do you want the one in Japanese or the one in English? Because there is actually, like, thing on the side for the Japanese one.
Whatever.
Okay. Well, here's the Japanese one.
Okay. If I can put my face to the screen and still read the English part. So is that Ojutai, Winter's Soul?
I think so.
Okay. Legendary creature, dragon rare, with flying and vigilance. Whenever a dragon creature you control attacks, target non-land permanent an opponent controls. It doesn't untap during your opponent's next untap step, and it's a 5/6. And again, something a bit more avian.
Yeah, it's that same sort of thing though, where it almost feels more intelligent-ish,
mm-hmm.
where it's not. About, especially the way that the sort of chest and the arms connect down into the front legs to almost look more like hands.
It definitely has a Jeskai feel about it.
Yeah, and it just feels too intelligent to be this beast that we're expecting.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously it's still fighting the Jeskai, but still. And there is flavor text, but obviously it's in, I think this is Japanese, and I'm not going to make a cultural assumption, though.
If you went back to it, I would have flipped.
And there's actually the other con has been spoiled, too.
Hooray.
So, the last dragon that we know of, Atarka, yes, because I'm misplacing the R. God damn.
Mm-hmm. You're just adding an A.
Atarka, World Render. For 5 colorless, a green and a red, it is a legendary creature dragon. It's a rare. A 6/4 with flying and trample, because somehow that works. And whenever a dragon you control...
It looks like it.
Oh, yeah. Like, I would believe that thing's going to trample me somehow in the air. Whenever a dragon you control attacks, it gains double strike until end of turn.
Yay.
It has trample. There's a problem with double strike most of the time, wherein if the creature was blocked, and manages to kill it with the first strike damage, the second hit doesn't do anything. He has trample. It still hits you. That's scary. She, because they're all female.
Yeah.
Her hunger knows no limit. Left unchecked, she would feast on all of Tarkir by Yasova Dragonclaw. So, I think we can safely say that whatever was on... What is her name? I already forgot. Ojutai
mm-hmm.
Is probably said by Shunyun.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's pretty confident that's Japanese, but I could be wrong.
This would be the last one.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. So.
Alicia, who smiles at death. 2 colorless, 1 red legendary creature, human warrior, obviously a rare, who's a 3/2 with first strike. Whenever Alicia, who smiles at death, attacks, you may pay. I can't tell what
kind. It's a two black-white hybrids.
Okay. If you do, return target creature card with power 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield, tapped and attacking. Greet death with sword in hand.
And she's a 3/2. I'm not sure if you got that part.
I did.
Okay. Somehow that completely missed, like, jumped right over my head. So that works really well with the Mardu. We're just like, we have all these freaking goblins. Look at all of them.
Go.
Like, I'm sad that I think my favorite card doesn't quite make it for the cut. Hang on. I need to check. Pulling back Brigade. Are they 2-power? They are 2-power! You can get a Ponyback Brigade! And therefore also get 3 goblins with it. Oh my god, this is my strategy now. This will be a deck, and I don't care. It will be my deck. Okay, I'm gonna have to build this now.
Cool.
I'm not even kidding. I have to build this now.
Okay.
Because it's going to be this, and her, and the Ankle Shanker, who doesn't quite work because he's got 1/2 high power, but still...
We can pretend.
Yeah. Oh, God, this is going to be such a derpy deck, and I'm going to love it so much.
You can call it the Oliver.
Oh, God, that would work very well. Yeah, so that is all of the, like, big faces that we know so far. I'm still betting that we're going to see some more mythic rare, like maybe some mythic rare legendaries, because right now all of the mythics are like just random schlubs who are admittedly have really amazing abilities. Mm. One of whom is a not so much better, but sort of like a fixed version of a card that was way too good when it was first printed, called what's it called? It was like the original level up, and I can't remember its name.
I do not have your encyclopedic knowledge.
It costs a red and a white, a red-white hybrid, and it is a Kithkin. And for, I think it's 2, it's a 1/1, and for you can pay 2 red and a white, and it turns into a Kithkin Warrior that's like a 2/2. And then you can pay, I think it's 4 red-white hybrid, and it turns into a Kithkin Spirit Warrior who has first strike and is a 4/4. And then for 8 red-white hybrid, and
do all you have, the, did all, you have to go through
yes,
the individual?
Yeah, they all have like claws where it's like, for it to become the warrior, there's
it's
nothing.
It's like Pokemon, you have to go through all the evolutions.
For it to become the Spirit Warrior, it has to already be a warrior. And then for it to become the last one, I believe it needs to be a spirit already, and it becomes an avatar and becomes an 8/8 with first figure of destiny. That's it. Okay. Took me a while when I got there.
I remember that once happened to me with the word mascot, but it took like 12 hours, and so I just yelled it at breakfast. My parents were like, Stephanie, what's wrong with you?
Okay, so I was really close. When it turns into the 4/4, it doesn't have any abilities. And for its next one, it just requires 6 red-white hybrid. And it reads, if Figure of Destiny is a warrior, it becomes an 8/8 Kithkin Spirit Warrior Avatar with Flying and First Strike. So there's basically like a slightly less crazy version of this.
Mm-hmm.
I will see, because it involves actually putting +1/+1 counters on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an odds-on thing, and it looks really cool. But we'll get to that next episode.
Uh-huh.
So
I like the card art of this.
Yeah, and the next one is really cool too, because it's the idea of he's just a guard who is literally just like he's the security guard for one of the kin trees,
mm-hmm.
and it's just like as he elevates through the ranks, like fighting the dragons and stuff. It's really cool.
Nice.
So let's leave off there, and before we like completely leave, do you have any final thoughts?
I like dragons and the story they're weaving. It's
yeah,
good.
I'm really looking forward to this, and I'm really looking forward to when we see what Dragons of Tarkir looks like,
because.
Mm-hmm. Now I'm, like, invested in this stupid time travel drunken stuff to the point where I'm almost going, I should go back and read the Uncharted Realms that I've missed, which is a lot of them. But, so...
We'll see.
Remember, you can follow all of the stuff that we do on our site, showoffnf.com. You can email us at theshowoffeastandfamine@gmail.com. You can follow me at... Cap America, spelled like it is in the show notes because it's weird and stupid to spell, on Twitter.
And I'm technically on Twitter as at Steph and F.
And we've also got our YouTube channel where things are actually going up on semi-regular basis. It's not as fast as it used to be, which is mostly so that I don't go completely insane. So, and we will see you next week because someone here is going to force me to grab Steph. Hopefully it'll be Steph that forces me to, but we'll see.
Okay. Ta-ra.
It might be the dog, honestly.
Okay.
So thank you all very much, and
Oliver wants
see
to
you.
Say goodbye. Oliver wants to say goodbye.
He's very quiet. Oof. Goodbye, everyone.